Hello, welcome to the second GST podcast, and we have yet another cracking interview for your delectation. A few weeks ago, I spoke to Paul Jubb. Paul became the first Brit in history to win the NCAA Men's Singles Championships in May. It was a pretty big deal, and it earned him a wild card into the Wimbledon main draw. This podcast actually comes from Eastbourne. I've just been hitting a little bit on the grass at Devonshire Park, where they hold the WTA events and the ATP 250, the very turf then that Jubb picked up two huge scalps this summer. One over Dennis Histamin, who famously defeated Djokovic in the 2017 Australian Open, and Andrei Rublev, one of the most promising next-gen front-runners, of course. So Jubb qualified for the 250 down here with those two wins, and a few weeks later, he faced João Sousa on court 17 at Wimbledon. Jubb's is a remarkable story. He tragically lost both his parents when he was very young and was brought up by his grandmother. Jonathan Newman wrote a really great piece for The Independent about Paul's background, so if you want to find out more about that, I do recommend you seek that out. I played with Paul many times as a junior, and in this interview, I spoke to him about his journey on the court, what all changed at 15, and about planning how to tackle the tour. You can find all of this in a feature I put together on grandslamtennis.online. But I'm off to Caroline Wozniacki's favourite ice cream parlour, and in the meantime, here's our conversation in full.
It must be crazy. I mean, well, I'll start first by asking you how the last month and a half has been, really.
Yeah, it's been really good just with, you know, some of the wins I've had and, you know, good, you know, confidence boost and stuff to see where my level is, even though I've been in college or whatever. It's still know that my, like, level is like the tour level right now and stuff. It's just a nice reality check, really. But yeah, it's been nice with like some of the attention and stuff, and just people, you know, noticing, you know, my progression and stuff.
Yeah, you've always struck me as a really level-headed competitor, and you looked it against Sousa, in that first round match at Wimbledon, of course. But describe your emotions after that first set. I remember arriving at court 17 and it was 5-love in the first set. I was like, oh no. Yeah. It must have been a bit of a, you know, you have those matches, don't you, where it kind of just rushes past you and you don't quite get a foothold. But you came back so well. Just describe your feelings over that moment.
I was slightly just kind of crap in my pants, really. And obviously, I would have liked to have a better start, and it would have been, I think, a way different match if I would have got at least a half decent start with, it would have given me a lot more confidence. But having a start like that, you know, on that stage, was like the biggest match of playing it. Obviously, like, didn't do, you know, give me the best chance to then start playing well. So I think after that, I mean, I knew I had to stay calm to even give myself a chance of getting close to making it a competitive match. And I knew I just had to keep working. Otherwise, if I'd have got negative, then it could have been love, love, and love. So, it was just something I knew I had to do to at least give myself an opportunity. So, I was probably just very disappointed with the start and just the way, it turned out.
Well, you certainly turned it around anyway. I mean, I remember I spoke to Dave Kitchen just afterwards because he was watching, and he said, well, you didn't look out of place against top 40 guy in the world. So you've got to be pleased with that, I guess. I know you'll want more, but I mean, to at least in a Wimbledon debut, it's a great effort, isn't it? I mean, do you think it was the occasion? Like when you were stepping onto court, what were your feelings? What was going through your head? That whole build up to that match, it must have been crazy.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, like I felt ready to actually like, you know, kind of own the court and put on a good performance, and I'd been feeling really good in practice and. Playing with a lot of confidence, and then to be honest, I don't really know what it was. Like I was just I was so ready just to get out there and start, you know, just swinging. And I think maybe that was actually the issue. Like, I'd been playing, feeling so good or whatever, and then all of a sudden, you know, I just wasn't feeling good as once we, like, I started hitting the ball or whatever. And I think if I'd have lowered my expectations from the start with how I'd been playing or whatever, then it could have been a bit different. But yeah, I actually felt ready, to be fair.
Yeah. Well, that bodes well anyway to have that mindset going forwards. But let's just go back a bit briefly, if I may. So I guess I know a bit about your tennis background, of course. We've played each other a few times. But I guess for people who don't know who you are, tell us about where and how it all began. When was the first kind of time you picked up a tennis racket, and then where did it go from there?
The first time I started playing was in my primary school, my first year of primary school, after the school tennis club or whatever. And then got asked to go to my local tennis club, which is like a 2-minute walk away. And then after a few years there, I started to take it more seriously. And then obviously I moved to Nuffield, where me and you have played there before, and in many matches or whatever. And trained there up until I left for college. And that was how it developed, really.
So yeah, your nan brought you up and took you along to tennis tournaments, didn't she? And then later, Johnny Carmichael, of course, started helping you with your travel. How much of a motivator is it to you, do you think, to make these individuals that have helped you along the way and taking you to where you are, how much of a motivator is it for you to make these people in your life proud, do you reckon?
Yeah, I think that's actually one of my main motivations, to keep striving. That's something I carry along with me to really push myself, just wanting to, you know, make the most out of everyone else's efforts towards my career, making it worth it. So I'd say that is probably one of my biggest motivators.
And I don't know, I'm not sure if you'd agree with me on this, but in saying that you were a relatively late bloomer compared to somebody like Jay Clark or Kyle Edmund, I guess he also was in Nuffield for a time, wasn't he? But looking back, do you think there was a moment when things started to click, or when you felt like, right, I can make a real fist of this? And I don't know, when did it all start to kind of come together?
I definitely say I was a late bloomer, and but I think throughout my career it's been a steady progression. But I'd say the main moment where I got, you know, a huge belief, or like, I remember having a conversation with Johnny, and it was about when I was 15 years old, 15, I'd probably say, just turned 15. And I remember telling Johnny that, you know, I think I can, you know, make tennis my career, and I think I can go far and do good things. And he had full confidence and belief in me. It was just something, you know, inside, I feel like I can, you know, be a good tennis player and make it my career. But obviously, you know, that doesn't mean I was going to be, you know, the best in the country and all that stuff straight away. But it's been a steady progression since then. But I'd say about 15 was the real moment, time where I had full belief.
And do you think, you're a young guy, so it's quite hard to kind of get his comment on something like this, but do you think your trajectory so far is something for the LTA maybe to consider going forwards?
I think definitely it's something what people should take into account, because I was never a top junior, and I think I used to worry about, you know, having to be a top junior to then move on into the pros. But seeing where I'm at now, and it happens all the time, and you see many top juniors not actually make anything of themselves. It's juniors actually doesn't really mean that much. And looking back on it, and I think a lot, if you're smart, and a lot of people actually know that juniors isn't the be all end all. So you don't have to be a good junior to then make something of yourself. So I think definitely there shouldn't be too much pressure, or I think too much speculation or whatever on if you're a good junior or not, because at the end of the day, you know, that doesn't mean you're going to have a good transition into the pros. So I'd definitely say, like, you know, if these good juniors or whatever, who, you know, have all the support in the world or whatever, they're not, you know, it doesn't mean they're going to, doesn't mean that they're going to be, you know, the next big thing. So obviously it's at the time, like, you know, I wouldn't, it'd be tough to give me all the support or whatever, because I wasn't one of the best ones. So I just had to keep working until I did become, you know, a top player or whatever. But I think it's junior tennis shouldn't be something what has a lot of, you know, eyes and you know, so much pressure on.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it potentially it's benefited you, right? Because you've kind of skipped all the Tennis Europe stuff, the kind of the junior ITF stuff out, and gone straight into the pros. So I guess you almost don't have, you don't have a chance to develop potentially those bad habits that you sometimes get in junior tennis. You were signing up as well for college when you were 16, right? So it's kind of like accelerated exactly. Your progression, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
So how does the Uni of South Carolina fit into all this? What was going there done for your game? And then what do you reckon it's done for you as a person as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's benefited me, you know, every way possible, and there's been no negatives from going there. You know, it's made me a more mature human being, and you know, I was independent before I left. I think that was a quality I had before, but it's definitely, you know, helped me progress my own independence or whatever. And and tennis wise, it's definitely made me a way better. The strides I've made since I've been there have been massive, and you know, that's obviously thanks to the coaches I have out there. You know, they're such great guys and know so much about the game. So I've been able to make big strides since I've been there, and I think it's just been such a great breath of fresh air and a great experience. I like doing something, you know. I think a lot of players and stuff from juniors, I think that's the thing, like they go into a full-time schedule and stuff and lose love for the game really quickly from going week in, week out to different places and get playing on the Futures Tour, like they lose love for the game. But you know, since I've been there, it's, you know, I've been doing school and stuff and I've had a normal life, and it's just been a really nice experience, and I've, you know, obviously still kept my love for the game or whatever. And then I've got to experience the best of both worlds, obviously coming back in the summer and stuff and playing pro tournaments, but then, you know, going back to college life and stuff. So it's been a really nice balance, and, you know, I'm excited to go back and finish my last year before then obviously going full-time into the pros.
What was the difference, did you feel, when you were, I mean, you've been, a lot of people probably haven't known that you were playing quite a few ITFs right before this last month and a half. So you've been on the circuit a little bit, you've been getting kind of taste for it. But what was the step up like? Did you feel like there was really a transition between when you're coming off the court at the NCAAs and then going to an ATP challenger? What was the step up, or did you just feel like, right, now I'm feeling comfortable here?
Yeah, I mean, I felt, you know, I was obviously nervous before I played the first time and stuff, and you know, I didn't know what fully to expect, but I was still confident of, you know, my level. But you never know. And then, you know, after, you know, stepping out there the first week and then second week, whatever, and I just realized, like, you know, that is my level really. And you know, I felt like I have every right to beat these guys, and you know, I felt like you know, my game is big enough to, you know, beat these guys. So it didn't feel like it a fluke or anything when I was, you know, winning those matches. And, you know, I think as from the NCAAs as well, like those guys who I was playing, they, you know, they're at that level too. So the top level of college tennis is very high. So, and I think not everyone understands that. And, you know, those guys, you know, the guy I played in the finals, for example, was just like 1-3 futures or whatever.
Wow.
So it's like, it is that level, and those guys are very, very good. So there's a lot of, and there's more and more, you know, top 100 players coming out of college now, like more players getting into the top 100 from coming out of college. So it's definitely growing by year, with the players year by year. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's playing at that level now is definitely helped me transition to playing and helped me succeed in these pro tournaments.
And you mentioned right at the start about this kind of the kind of education you've had over the last month and a half. What area of your game do you think you most need to work on after playing all these matches?
You say what area to work on?
Yeah.
I think at this level, like, you know, having a good serve is a big thing. You know, my serve has got better, you know, recently, but it's definitely something what can still get better, and you know, it's something what can, you know, help me earn more 3 points. And yeah, the more easier holding games you have, the easier life becomes on the tennis court. But and then I think just a bit of net play, a bit more clinical at the net, and is one thing I can improve on. But I think from the baseline, I can compete with anyone from the baseline. So it's just little things here and there, but nothing. There's no huge developments where I feel like I'm very far behind in. It's just getting some little things a little bit better, which will make big differences.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned finally that, so you're going to complete, the plan is to complete your final year at college, right? And then after that, you're having a go on the tour. Just talk to us about what your plan is for the next 12 months.
Yeah, I'm going to play tournaments up until the end of this year, and then I'm going to go back for my last season, and then going to finish. I've got to finish my classes and graduate. But yeah, like, for me, there's no real rush right now to rush out onto the pro tour. I'm just still developing, and it's, you know, everyone's on their own path, and I feel like this is my path. And you know, just because I've had a bit of success now doesn't mean, you know, I let it go to my head and stuff. I'm still, you know, I still feel like I've got, you know, more things to improve on before I go full time onto the pro tour and stuff. So yeah, I think my, you know, next year I'll be back at college and stuff, and then obviously I'll be playing some pro tournaments in the summer or in the holidays. But yeah, and then once I'm done there, then I've got to decide, you know, where I want to train out of and things like that. But yeah, I'll be looking to, you know, have a full-time schedule on the professional tour and try and work my way up.
Excellent. Well, best of luck, Paul. Thanks a lot for speaking to us. And I know you've got a tournament tomorrow. Whereabouts is it?
At the National Tennis Centre in Roehampton.
Oh, nice. Okay. So what's the occasion?
It's a 25K.
Nice.
Futures.
Nice. So. Well, best of luck. We'll be keeping close tabs on you. And I know you're doing a lot of people in Yorkshire proud, so keep it up. And I'm sure a lot of people in South Korea, Union, South Carolina as well.
Cheers, man.
Cheers. Thanks a lot, Paul. Speak to you soon. So there we have it. I hope that's left you feeling like you know Paul Jubb a little bit better.
He may well have a big role to play in the future of British tennis. He has such great humility, but ever since his early teens, he had this steely determination. I'm sure that came across. He lost in the semi-finals of the ITF in Roehampton to a certain Jack Draper in the end. Let's hope that could be one of many meetings between the pair in the years to come. So we're now up and running on iTunes, Spotify and Acast, so please subscribe wherever you get your pods and leave us a review. We're going to be in New York next week. I'll be in the UK, but Roger and the rest of the team are going to be out there and I'll be getting their thoughts. We're also going to have decorated tennis journalist and broadcaster Barry Flatman on the pod, so can't wait for that. In the meantime, have a fabulous week, and while it might be the same old for British tennis with Sir Andy on the comeback trail, might soon be a few new faces on the scene too. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.